Thursday, the 12th of November, Kof Hei Mal Cheshvan, Rabbi Chaim Rubin, The Legacy of Rav Moshe.
I'm not used to the London weather. Came down with some kind of a cold. It's a lot warmer than here. I'll try to do my best. Well, I was told that the subject of this morning would be to speak about my Rosh Hashiva. Made me feel very great. Really, it was a beautiful thing because give me an opportunity to share with you some of the insights that probably have not been printed in any of the books, many of the Svarim, Rav Moshe, and others. First, Rav Moshe Feinstein, I hope everyone understands that this is, was the Gaon HaDor, the Posek HaDor. He's probably more of a legend to all of us, but at the same time, I try to bring out some personal things about him. First of all, we should know that is that Rosh Yeshiva Zatal was a person with a tremendous amount of patience. He sort of could relate to everyone, both to adults and to children as well. The Rosh Yeshiva never insisted on any title, not a Rav, not a Goan, not a Tzaddik, nothing of the kind. He became plain Rav Moshe. And it's very interesting to know that at one time the Rosh Yeshiva Zatal, he was officiating at a wedding in a very famous hotel in New York called the Waldorf Astoria. And as he was about to embark on the escalator going down, and he was standing up there with one of those who assisted him, as he was going down, all of a sudden someone from the bottom called out, "Hi Moshe!" So, you know, however, Rosh Hashiva responded, "Good evening to you as well." Of course, this person didn't have Rosh Hashiva in mind. He had a friend of his that he saw Moshe. I'm Moshe, but Rosh Hashiva knew how to respond to him. In 1953, I'm going back a number of years, and I'm sorry to say that those of us who were one of the first Talmidim of the Rosh Hashiva, unfortunately, are thinning out. And you should know that in 1956, I received smicha from the Rosh Hashiva, and the Rosh Hashiva was a Masada Ki Kiddushin at my chasna. On that same evening, he had no less than three chasnas. I was the last one. And the chuba took place about 11:15 at night. It was kind of late. But I had the good fortune of having Rosh Hashiva to officiate. And besides that, I also had the good fortune of being his chauffeur for a while. For example, I would take him home from the yeshiva to his house every day, which was a very short distance. And even when we were together with Rosh Hashiva, you didn't want to bother him, because after all, the whole world came to him with their problems. There was an abundance of shyness that came in from Kol Olam, and they all ended up on his table. So I remember one time I was taking him to a bris in the morning, and as we were driving in Brooklyn on the way to the bris, and I saw that she was somehow had relaxed a little bit, and I took the opportunity to ask him. I told him the following, that every night, this was my first position as a rabbi in New York, and every night I would sit with the children and teaching them from 4:30 in the afternoon till about 11:30 at night. And I said to Rabbi, "I feel I'm neglecting my own children. I don't have a chance to spend much time with them. I'm there in the shul Friday night and Shabbos night. Every night I'm there till they're late." And she said, "You continue to do what you're doing, and Abraham will help." And Baruch Hashem, each one of my children grew up to become a Gedolim Batorah, my daughter married, big Talmidei Chachomim, and obviously the Brocha of the Rosh Hashiva somehow took place, and I'm very, very thankful for that. I remember incidentally when I came that morning to pick up the Rosh Hashiva to be the Sandek at the Bris, and I came very early in the morning, about 5:30, it was some far away, and I was always amazed the way the Rosh Hashiva was dressed. He would dress according to the way the two Shulchan Aruch tell us. For example, if you say, Otze Yisroel Sephora, you put on his hat. If he says another bracha, you put on his shirt. Roka Otzal Amoyim, you put his feet on the ground. That's the way it was. So when I came in, he looked kind of funny with the shirt outside the pants, with a hat on, and the table was filled with Sephorim that was open, because I asked him, Rebbe, and this early in the morning, that's the time when you study. He said, what else can I do? And Taka, that's what he did. So it was a wonderful thing to see the Rosh Hashiva, how he officiated, and how Rosh Hashiva he conducted himself, not only in his forum of Dibros Moshe, and Igwas Moshe, and Koras Moshe, and there's a number of forum with the title of his name on it. Rosh Hashiva was... unbelievable. If the world would not have put all the burden upon him, he could have written his own library. Mamash, his own library. He was in Halacha, in Torah, in Dush, in Vemis, in Sain, anything. That was for him. So I remember when I had my first son, it's already, all of a sudden, he's not alive anymore, and I invited him to be the Sandek. And someone brought him in, and being I was a rabbi of a Sephardic shul, so the chacham, he said, I'm very sorry, but the first Santa Claus belongs to the father of the mother. So I looked at Shiva, I'm bringing him in from New York to Brooklyn, and he said, quiet, don't make anything of it, it's very fine, and he became Rav Shiva, the Santa guy, the second one. And then, of course, being that I was going to be a rabbi with his father, and I asked Rosh Hashiva, I said, how am I going to conduct myself? I'm an Ashkenaz myself, and here you have the real Sfadim from Syria and from Egypt, and they have their own customs. And this is what he answered me. Everything that you do privately, you do it your way. And whatever you do in public, you do it their way. For example, if you get an aliyah to the Sefer Torah, so you say the bracha the way they would do it, and they even add a couple of words to it, Asher Natan Lanu Torah Torah Demet V'Chayei Olam. In other words, they added to it, but he said that's the way it was done. Rosh Hashiva was such a simple person. It was high for me even to be master to understand that if he was called to officiate at a wedding, and the people did not send a taxi for him, he alone would go into a subway. And believe me, the subways in New York are not the safest place. He had no fear whatsoever. He would go on his own. So finally, people realized, you wonder what she was to be Messiah and Kedusha. At least they sent a car for him, send a taxi for him. But that's the way he was. There was a certain Russian lady who used to get letters from Russia, and she couldn't read the Russian language. Rosh Hashiva, of course, was a rov in Russia before that, in a city called Luban. So whenever she got a letter, she would always call upon Rosh Hashiva. She was able to walk up to his place in the base of Medrash. He would read the letter aloud for her and explain to her what it says. But that's the way he was. Kindness to everyone, men, women, children, it was all the same. I had, of course, another problem. And that was that on Pesach, we used to go to my father-in-law's house, which was a real Sephardi house. And in Sephardi, they eat rice on Pesach. And I asked Rosh Hashiva, how am I going to conduct myself? And this is what he said. You yourself, you take the very first of the meat and the potatoes, whatever else they had, and you leave that rice alone. However, your wife and your children can eat rice on Pesach. That's the way the Rosh Hashiva Paskin. Incidentally, I want to take this opportunity that no one should think, Chas v'Sholom, that there's any chometz in the rice that is finally by eating on Pesach. I see with my own eyes, they put in X amount of rice in the plate. They go through grain by grain by grain. Anything that's a little off color goes out on the side. Then they do it a second time. If there's still left something on the color side, and each grain of rice have really been checked out thoroughly three times, so there's nothing really to worry about. I used also to have a junior congregation, And Rosh Hashiva said, that's not the way of teaching our children. In other words, junior congregation would be what we call a Sefer Torah that's printed on paper, and you would call out three people, and you said, that's not the way we teach our children. It has to be a real Sefer Torah, and there has to be seven people plus the Maftir to go up. We only want to teach the children the right way. And the same thing happened, that there were children that had the opportunity to daven together with Balabatim in the shul, and Rosh Hashiva said, better for them to daven in the classroom together with their Rebbe, that they should learn how to do things right. Rosh Hashiva had a very interesting way, the way he would put on his tefillin. It's something that I've never seen by anyone else in the world. And I've been traveling quite extensively throughout the world. He would put on the tefillin shaliyad. He would only go around his arm three times. Then he would go around his fingers and his hand. They would put on the tefillin shel rosh. Then he would untie and he would go poseach es yodecho umasbiyah lechol chai rotzo, and then he would do it. I heard that his one of his sons, he left two sons, one of Reb David Feinstein, who is the Rosh Hashiva in the Yeshiva in New York in the East Side, MTJ, Masechta Tiferes Yerushalayim, and his other son is Rev. Reuben Feinstein, who's in charge of the Yeshiva on Staten Island. Yeshiva Staten Island is a Yeshiva for very gifted children, and my son, Olam Shalom, learned there for a while. They said that it was the second highest IQ that ever went into the shul. So we should know that Rosh Hashiva, and there's many things to tell, and something that really taught us a lot, and we tried to carry out after him. Rosh Hashiva, among the questions that was asked, if any of you have been to New York and to Brooklyn in particular, you'll know there's an area called Flatbush. Flatbush has a very wide street going through from Avenue A, B, C, D, all the way up to the letter Z. And there was always a question about establishing an A-roof in Flatbush. What happened was that being that there was no A-roof in Flatbush, and a lot of the young women, the young couples, the woman said, we can't leave the house on the Shabbos. We are prisoners in our own home because we have little children. We can't leave. And they went to the local rabbis and said, listen, either you find us a way of getting out of here, or we're moving to Long Island. The rabbis didn't want to lose any of their congregants. So they called in Rosh Hashiva that he should paskin, can we establish an A-room in Flatbush? So Rosh Hashiva said no. And why was that? So we know there's a difference between the Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYochid. Rishus HaRabim has to be a certain amount of meters, and also 600,000 people at a time. Now, if you think of the whole Ocean Parkway, from letter A to letter Z, and it would probably take a couple hours to walk by foot, and of course, Rosh Hashiva would then figure out that all the amount of people that lived in the houses and the people that traveled there on the Ocean Parkway, plus the subways that was underneath, it definitely had 600,000, and they did not allow it. So they said, look, we're going to lose our congregants. So they figured, let's look for another rabbi. No, of course, if you try to match up someone with Rosh Hashiva, it was a very poor match. But this is the way the Rosh Hashiva responded. He said, I realize that not everyone agrees with my psalkim, with my psalk. And you should know one thing, however. I have never read a newspaper. I have never read a magazine. I never watched television. And everything that I say is Kulo Torah. Now, I didn't say the other people that maybe they went to college and they went to the universities or they had what other trafe thoughts came into their thoughts. And I tell you, this is something that's very special. When I was last week speaking in Manchester, and I was staying by someone's house, and you should excuse me, but in the men's room, where I went in, I happened to notice a book. And the title of that book was Raw Food. Raw Food against apples, fruits, vegetables, and obviously it was a person who was very concerned about the intake of their food. So I opened up the book and I glanced at a couple of pages, and the first thing I saw was a quotation from the New Testament. So I said to myself, that's something. Raw food sounds very kosher. But all of a sudden, you find in here a quote from the New Testament. And this is what Rosh Yeshiva said. My Torah is kula Torah. Nothing but Torah. There's nothing in there at all. And I remember that at one time he was at a convention up in upstate New York. And this goes back a number of years before the mobile phones, before the telephones. And sure enough, there was a phone call that came in from Eretz Israel. Rosh Yeshiva is standing in the corner, and they had just finished the Shmoneh Esrei, it was a mincha in the afternoon. And sure enough, it had been the motion to Rosh Yeshiva, there's a phone call for you in the lobby. Rosh Yeshiva just remained standing. And a few minutes later, she said, Rebbe, they're waiting for Mrs. Swell to speak to you. So she said, what can I do? There's a man still standing in Shmoneh Esrei, and this man is to me a kier, he's a wall, and I cannot go through a wall. So Shiva was stuck where he was until this person would go back. This is how meduyak, medayek that he was in carrying out the laws. Rabbi Victor Miller was also one of my rabbis, and I lived in his neighborhood when I got married, and I remember at the time that Rosh Yeshiva Zatal, in order to raise funds for the yeshiva, he would go one Matur Shabbos to one neighborhood, another Matur Shabbos to another neighborhood, and he would speak to the people, and hopefully he would raise funds for his yeshiva. So Rabbi Victor Miller, who announced from the pulpit, now you should know that tonight we have the Gadol Hador in our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is going to light up tonight. And just like your grandparents will tell you that they have seen the Chofetz Chaim, you'll be able, if you come tonight, to tell the people that what? That you've seen the Gadol Hador, Rosh Yeshiva. And that, of course, is a tremendous limit. Because when I mentioned that up in Manchester, so Rabbi Lewis, he said the following. He said there was a certain, one of the boys from the yeshiva, he had been in a certain neighborhood, all Shabbos, and it goes back also a number of years, and there was a Rabbi Schwab. I didn't get the first name. And he said, did you look at the eyes of Rabbi Schwab? Did you look at his hands? And the boy said, no, why should I? He said, do you know when this Rabbi Schwab was 17 or 18 years of age, he shook hands with the Chofetz Chaim? So there was something to look at. I'm not expecting, and believe it or not, being that I had done, shook hands with Rosh Yeshiva, I don't know how many times, he arranged it so, that after I finished my talk, all the boys passed by, I had to shake hands with each one, I give each one a bracha, because I had to shake hands with the Rosh Yeshiva. Rosh Yeshiva had another strange thing. If he were getting aliyah to Sefer Torah, he would not hold at the Eitz Chaim with his bare hands. If he had a talis, he would hold his talis and on his hand on the Eitz Chaims. And if it was, for example, a time where he wouldn't have a talis on Maybe Shabbos Mincha, he would then take his frog. And with the frog, he would hold on to the handles of the Sefer Torah. This is what it was. If you're going to ask me why, I don't know why, but that's what he did. And while they were laying, for example, on the Monday, Thursday morning, with Shodesh, a boy would hold the Chumash by laying, and if he got Shlishi, of course, he was a Israel, he would not leave the Bima itself until the Sefer Torah was brought back. Then he would also go back. There's a number of things that caught my attention, and these are things that I'm trying to emulate and try to be. I'm sure everyone read the story about when someone was taking Rosh Yeshiva in his car, and unfortunately he got a finger caught in the door And even though he was in excusable pain, but he didn't cry out at all, he didn't say anything, he didn't want the person who had done him a chesed, they should feel bad about it, but this is what he was. I remember on my second trip when I went to Eretz Yisrael, first time was 1966, when we didn't have the Kotel as yet. In 1970 we had the Kotel and I went to the Kotel. And I could not understand, I go to the Kotel for the first time. And I heard so much about it, I read so much about it, and I'm supposed to feel very inspired, and I didn't at all. And I tried to understand what was wrong. So of course it happened to be on a Friday night, and half of Brooklyn was there, and everyone was sharing why they are there. Excuse me. I can understand that that was something. But then I came to the conclusion that when I traveled in the yeshiva, and I sat right opposite with yeshiva, and I saw the way he davened, the way, for example, he would say, Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu, Shem Echad, how he would move his head in all six directions of the world, the four directions, and up and down, that's how he would say Echad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was one. And therefore, I understood that by davening in the presence of a living Kaisel, he said that obviously he had taken away from the inspiration of the stones of the Kotel itself. Here's a man who learned 202 times Talmud Bavli. Now, I don't know when he started, but if we were to assume that he started maybe around 20, and he went maybe around 10-90, about 70 years, so it's going to come out about roughly about three times every year, finishing the whole Shas. Besides, he learned two Shulchan Aruch, all Arba Chalokim, more than 600 times. I don't know the amount of times he learned the Shulchan Aruch, and all the Rishonim, and all the Achonim. It was Kula Torah, there was nothing but that. And I must tell you an experience that really did a lot to me. One Friday night, I down in the yeshiva, and after the minyan, after the Arvis was over, the yeshiva said, we all go into, I think it was Allen Street, which was only two, three blocks away from the yeshiva. I said, what are we going to do on Allen Street? He said, we're going into a store. Shabbos? He said, go into a store? The yeshiva said, yes. And he went into the store Friday night on Shabbos with all the Talmidim that followed him. What are you going to do in the store? You're not going to buy anything? He's going to talk the man out of opening on Shabbos, of closing his store on Shabbos. That's what he went for. And the yeshiva was matzliach. The man saw the yeshiva came in, when all the Talmidim came into the store, and from then on he closed. I remember there was a supermarket that was around the area that he lived in, and also they wanted that supermarket to close on Shabbos, so it was decided that we should pick at the store, meaning the Shabbos morning after davening, we would all walk around, because we didn't have any signs or anything of the kind, and a woman asked to tell me, what's taking place here? He said, well, we're picketing the store. He said, which union? He said, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis. I'm picketing. And she said, if that's the case, I'm not going to into a store to buy anything. So there were certain things that was done that had a result. There was also another thing about the yeshiva, you know, the difference in time between Eretz Yisrael and America. Sometimes, I don't know what it's here, 5 hours, 7 hours. And someone called from Eretz Yisrael to America, wanted to speak to a yeshiva. He seemed to come out probably about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And the yeshiva was still asleep, but he took the telephone. And the person said, is this Rabbi Feinstein? Yes. He said, well, I have a shaila. So she was saying, please wait a moment. I have to say the Birkas HaTorah first. So she would say the Birkas HaTorah, and then he would then take the telephone, and he would ask the person for the name and address. And a few days later, he sent a check because the man had held the telephone for the few minutes it would take him to say the Birkas HaTorah. What can I tell you? Incidentally, talking about Birkas HaTorah, I would like to say all of you who are present, you know, when we say the Birkas HaTorah in the morning, what do? We say V'harem Noam V'tzetzu'enu V'tzetzu'e Beis Yisrael V'amcho Beis Yisrael. What does that mean? That we wish that we learn Torah, our children will learn Torah, our grandchildren will learn Torah, our so-called Hadoras. But unfortunately, there's a lot of kids today with no fathers, they're orphans. And who are the ones who are going to replace them? It's going to be us. Then when we say the bracha in the morning, we say, Kol Am Chobeis Yisrael, have in mind all the orphans, whether you know them or not, all those who have no fathers, to say this blessing for them. This is something I think that's very important. At one time, the Rosh Hashiva was given a drosha on Shabbos HaGadol. And towards the end of the drosha, he felt chest pain. He was stubborn, and he finished his drosha. After the drosha, he sat down. The family came over to him and asked, what's wrong? He said, call an ambulance right away on Shabbos and take me to the hospital. I think I had a heart attack. And Rosh Hashiva was taken to the hospital and they checked him out, and it was decided that he was going to have a pacemaker. Now, the Mashiach was very worried about the pacemaker. Why? If Mashiach would come and the Sanhedrin would be established, he knew that he would get a place in the Sanhedrin. And he was afraid of having something inserted in him that he would be a Baal Mum. He'll be someone with a blemish, and maybe they would parcel him there from being part of the Sanhedrin. However, he had to go through it, and of course he asked the family which doctor is going to do it. And they said, well, only the best. So they called up the best doctor to put in a pacemaker, and this doctor was away on vacation. So they came to Rosh Hashiva and said, what should we do? He said, we're on vacation. He said, take the second best, take the third best. What's the difference? He said, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to wait for the best to come back. So the best came back, and he did a terrible job. He was the best, but he really messed up the Rosh Hashiva, and there was the danger of his life. So he wanted to do tshuva, and he wanted to say vidui before. He thought this could very well be his end. So how did he do tshuva? Listen to this. He's about 84, 85 years of age. He's going backwards. 85, no avarus. 84, no avarus. 83, 70s, 60s, 50s, 40s, 30s, 20s, 10s. Till he's 6 years old, it's the first avera that he can account for. And what was the avera? So the teacher asked a certain question, and there was only two boys who raised their hands for the answer. So the teacher asked the second boy, what's your answer? And the teacher liked the answer very much. He said, Nu, and you, Moshe, what is your answer? And Rosh Hashiva gave a different answer, 6 years old. And Rosh Hashiva liked the second answer better than the first. So Rosh Hashiva said, I can imagine how the other boy felt. And he felt that this was an avera that he had, going back from 84, 85 to the age of 6, could not find any avers. If you were to ask me about the last 10 minutes, I'm sure that I could have done. Towards the very end, he said a number of bachurim from different yeshivas came in, they lined up, and they asked questions. I was very annoyed by it, because these questions, they could open up the kids of Shulchan Aruch, and they would have found the answers. Why Mutzah? Why bother the Rosh Hashiva? Well, that's what they did. But then again, I said to myself, there's a big difference. If you look it up yourself in the kids of Shulchan Aruch, or if you hear it from the Gadol Hador, what he says. So I think the time is running short, but I'd like to say one more thing. Rosh Hashiva was Nifta. The Levaya in New York took place on the Tainis Esther. And it was a very hot day, And the Mashgiach said that he asked for each one of them a speeding, only to speak no more than 5 minutes. It was hard for the people to stand in the burning sun. It was a fast day. Anyway, it says that they brought him eventually to Israel for burial, and they had others buried him here as well. So there was a man, a Yerushalmi Yid, he was very annoyed. He said, what? We have to be vital, the holiday of Purim for a Levi. Who's here anyway? And it seemed from then on he started to get headaches. Terrible headaches. And they went to the doctors and took medication, and nothing helped him at all. Someone suggested, go to the kever of the Rosh Yeshiva, ask for mechilah. And that's what the man did. He went to Har Menuchot, he went to Rosh Yeshiva's kever, he asked for mechilah, and his headache disappeared. So, I only have good things, Baruch Hashem, to say about Rosh Yeshiva. That's it? Okay. I would wish, because every time I used to travel, Rosh Yeshiva used to tell me that I should accept his blessings and give it to the Hamon Ham, to everyone. So even though Rosh Yeshiva is not with us, I'm sure if he would have known that I would go now, he would ask me to bless you all. And can I throw in one minute?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I got to tell you this. I learned every Wednesday morning with a Belsa Chosid. Every morning. So one day he tells me, you know what? I have a bris take place in the Belsa Beis HaMedrash this afternoon, and the Belsa Rebbe is going to be both the Sandik and the Mile. So I said, I never saw the Belsa Rebbe close up. I want to go. So I went, and sure enough, the Belsa Rebbe did, he was the Sandik, he did the bris, and now he goes back to his seat, and everybody's lining up. And I asked why they're lighting up, to get a bracha from the Rebbe. No, so I figured I'd get a bracha also. So I lined up, and I got a bracha, gesund, and I forgot what the second word was. Goes back a number of years. Okay, there was time to daven mincha, and now I see that the Belsa Rebbe with his gavi is leaving. I get what we call a brainstorm. And I run after the Rebbe. And this is what I said. Rebbe, I know that the whole world comes to you for blessings. Who blesses you? Take him back. He said, I like to give you a blessing. So I wish him a long life and a life of health. He should lead his Hasidim to great heights and this and that. And he said, V'hamavarech yisbarech. That the one who blessed me should become blessed himself. So everybody walked out with one blessing. I walked out with two brachas. I come to the yeshiva and I tell him about my experience in the Belsa Beis HaMedrash. So the yeshiva takes my right hand. He says, someone who blessed the Belsa Rebbe, I also want a bracha. And he put it on his head and I blessed him too. So there was one Jew there from the Haredim, what was probably called the Super, and he said, only a Litvak could do that. No one else.